wishing you much to be thankful for. Your marriage sing.
All I ever wanted was to be in love with you. When your eyes met mine, I knew that this was really true.
Hello and welcome again to the Music of Marriage with
Bob and
Evie. And we have been on the radio about a couple years now, I guess, trying to help ourselves and others to be encouraged about the possibilities with marriage in terms of it lasting through all the ins and outs and ups and downs. And we have a website called themusicofmarriage.com and a book there, How to Make Your Marriage Sing, and it is 5 Biblical Dynamics to Keep the Music Playing. Of course, there's millions of them, but we picked out and focused on 5, and anyway, we did a series in the beginning on kind of based on musical concepts and ideas, and then last year did a series called God's Love Language, of which we have a book coming out called God's Love Language for Marriage and Relationships, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And anyway, as we cycle along through our lives and have to come up with content each week to talk about marriage, it's definitely a personal challenge for us because none of us measures up to the glowing and wonderful, lovely standards that we all have in our minds, right? Our spouses. We have a great ideal at the beginning, and then life happens, and do we have what it takes to make a marriage last? And a lot of this applies, obviously, to all relationships, these same principles, but in marriage you're kind of stuck, you know, unless every time you argue you just leave, then you'd have about 10 billion marriages by the time you were done. But you know, there are principles that God gives us that make it last and help the music to keep on playing.
Yes. So, and we're not talking about making it last today, we're just talking about the dynamics of relating to one another and communicating, and we're focusing, but they all contribute, of course, to making the marriage last, and either detract or contribute, one or the other. But we are talking about marriage as a conversation today, and the concept of dialogue or monologue, right? So, I mean, communication is one of the biggest problems we hear from counselors in marriage, communication problems.
It's interesting, too. I asked my sister-in-law, who lives in Australia, and she's a counselor. I said, what's the most popular marriage problem? The most common, the number one thing people, well, I'm just curious when people come to you. And she said, well, communication. And I'm thinking, okay, well, that seems sensible that it would be that. But when we think of and break down what's behind how we communicate with people, and then we think of this, is it a monologue or is it a dialogue? You know, we know that a dialogue is when two people are discussing things, or two or more people or groups are discussing things, and you're exploring a subject or the resolution of a problem. But you have a discussion, and so both, you know, both sides are interested to hear both sides, and they give time to speak. And in legal settings especially, you know, you can't talk while the other one has the floor. You have to wait for your turn. Your lawyer has to wait to represent you or whatever. it's more of a dialogue, maybe in a courtroom or whatever. But in our lives, in every day, we don't often let each other finish sentences. And, you know, when there are protests and people are mad about something and they go to Washington or wherever they go, or they're yelling and they're screaming and they're all talking at once, it's like you can't even think straight, because no one is calm enough or kind enough to let the other person, mainly kind enough to let the other person finish to try to understand. And then an amazing thing happens when you do let someone totally finish their sentence. And then you're really trying to understand them. That's when the communication happens. And then they know you're trying to understand and maybe put yourself in their shoes. And that's where the love comes in, on the heels of that communication, right? That shows the person you actually are loving them, whether you like them or not. You're showing love to them by letting them finish. And then there's kind of the echo of their words that they can hear. And they also have the echo of your love, that you allowed them to finish their sentence, which is really what dialogue is about in relationships. Often, if you're a parent with children, or an adult, whatever, we don't have the patience. We're impatient. We just want it. Someone starts saying something, your child starts asking for something, or your spouse, and you just jump. You jump after they have five words out of their mouth because you're sure you know what they're going to say. Chances are 99% you really don't know, but that 1% maybe you do. But even if you do know what they're going to say, the whole thing about interrupting people, and in marriage, this is what arguments and the yelling and the shouting and all that stuff, it becomes, the person can't even finish their thought. So it becomes not a conversation, but everybody's on the defensive.
As a matter of fact, attitudes like that are very attack-oriented or finger-pointing in a caustic way often shut the communication down between the people because the other person doesn't even want to speak now.
Right. You're not listening to me. And listening, that's also a number one part of communication counseling issue, you know.
Or respecting. You're not respecting me by speaking to me in such a manner.
The whole thing about listening is where you are, you know, not hearing a sound of their voice. Not I heard you, but I listened. And, you know, we've talked about that before. But a monologue is where one person is always tending to assert their point of view in a very strong way and an overcoming way that just shuts down the people in the household. But, you know, the other people in your life. So if you're a person who has a tendency, which we all do in different ways and degrees, to shut down a person because you want to, that's just the way you are used to being, it really will help a lot to step back and think and try to just, you know, I know for me it takes work to keep my mouth shut and just let Bob say what he's going to say sometime, even though I kind of think I know where it's going.
Is that good or bad?
Did that come off wrong? I guess you could just take it in the best way possible.
Yeah.
Always take what
we'll
I say you, in the best
we'll
way possible.
We'll let you folks decide out there.
I meant well. I don't know. You better take over, Bob. I'm losing it.
No, you're fine. There was a very interesting thing that we actually brought this up in our last book, How to Make Your Marriage Sing, and it was a chapter in there called Marriage as a Conversation, and we addressed this whole idea of dialogue versus monologue, and what really struck us or inspired this whole idea was Bob Dylan recently did a release of cover tunes from the 40s and 50s. Frank Sinatra sang many of those cover tunes back in that era. And in an interview with Rolling Stone magazine, they asked Bob, you know, what he thought of Sinatra. And Bob Dylan said, Frank had the ability to get inside of the song in a conversational way. Frank sang to you, not at you. And, I, you know, I thought that was very interesting. Well, a very insightful comment. Bob Dylan doesn't say too many words when you, when you're in any interview. Look at any interview with Bob. And he's very few word type of guy. But the words he says are extremely insightful in most cases. This one happened to be getting inside the song in a conversational way. It was like, you know, Frank was having a conversation with you, you know, whether he's talking about his, you know, ups and downs of his love life or, you know, just some other topic, his view of life. this getting inside the song in a conversational way is often what's lost in a marriage relationship. And so we kind of made that connection there. Is your spouse talking to you or at you?
Are you talking at your spouse?
Yeah.
And at people. And it's your ideas that have to take the limelight always in your words.
Yeah. So this whole idea of a conversation really starts out at the beginning of marriage. Well, actually, all the way back to the dating relationship, right, where you kind of cherish every thought your spouse, your dating partner has. And because you do, you're intent on listening very closely to their thoughts and their desires and their dreams and all of that stuff. And when all those things coincide, you come to a point where you realize, hey, maybe we should get married. You know, we're all after the same thing here. So, and I'm definitely after you.
And then you get married.
Yeah.
And then you get married. And then you realize, oh, there's a lot more to that. It, you know, it reminded me of my art teacher, and Bob and I both went to art colleges in Philadelphia, but I had art many years before that, a really wonderful teacher. I actually learned more from her than I did when I went to art school in college. But she would wander around the class when we were painting with our easels up and our canvases, and she gave very insightful instructions when she would walk by each of our paintings. And she would notice something, and she would say, now, you know, the great painters, if they use yellow here, then you'll notice that the spot of yellow over here is a slight bit different. It's not the exact same yellow. Okay, I'll put yellow here, put yellow there, because that kind of flattens it. So you want to have a little interest, so you maybe add a little, make that yellow a hair peachy, or that one a hair paler. Her advice as she walked around the room was just spot on, as opposed to my art teacher, my painting teacher at Tyler School of Art, who would never be in the classroom. He'd say, okay, six paintings are due in 6 weeks. Well, okay, see you later. But so why do I even come to the class? So I come with my easel. I'm like the only one in the middle of this huge room painting, trying to be the one who showed up. And he's never there. Finally, one day he does come, and he slowly, quietly walks over to my painting without a word, takes the brush from me, puts it in some yellow, puts a little dab of yellow, and then puts it down and walks out. Doesn't say anything. I'm like, okay. That was communication. But anyway, it's a topic that is a never-ending challenge. But one thing my art teacher used to say in high school was, as she'd walk around the room, there's a million good beginnings. And you'd think, oh great, you know, That's not that encouraging, but it's true. You know, how many times do we start a painting? It's like, ooh, color, you know. Or any project, you get all excited about it, including marriage. You have this glowing idea, a song, I'm going to write a song. I'm going to do this. I'm going to plant a garden. I'm going to whatever it is. And then the reality comes to the work of it. Well, or we're thinking about, do we get chickens now that we have a place with a little bit of land or not? And it's all exciting. It looks so nice in the book.
Yeah.
But when you think about actually having them, and then are you free to go on trips, or what kind of work does it entail? That's how life is. You know, the beginnings are great, but then you get into it, and it's this conversation. The way we talk to one another reflects so much about how we think. Even the Bible says, as he thinks in his heart, so is a man. You know, we are how we think, and we speak according to how we think. And so that idea of dialoguing and conversation, like you said, with the music, I've heard descriptions of the most popular music is usually the most relatable music universally, that people can relate. Like that's with Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
They could relate to what he wrote so well. You know, he wrote from getting inside of where people are living, our experience, how we all feel. So when your dad in his garage all those decades would have his little radio with Frank Sinatra on while he was taking apart his Mercedes, every bolt, and putting it back together, he loved that music. And your mom, and that was always on when we brought the kids over on Saturday night, which is a fond memory, how they filled the house with that music. And the music soared, and it made your heart soar. Why? Because he cared. It felt like he cared about you, and it made you care about these things that he was singing about love and life. And that's what the music of marriage should be.
My dad also liked Neil Diamond and Glenn Campbell because for the same reason. They just really got into a zone and knew how to communicate their feelings about it, and in a way that made you listen. You know, in fact, I think Glenn Campbell was probably one of the few guys who wrote a number one hit that had no chorus, no interludes, no bridge. It was just all a series of the same verses, the same melody line, all the way through to the end. Can you guess what that song is, Daryl? the number one Glenn Campbell hit.
Wichita Lineman?
Starts with G.
By the time
Gentle.
I get to Phoenix? The John Hartford, Gentle on My Mind.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just a poem, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, yeah.
He just repeats the same verse over and over and over.
Well, it's different verses, but the same melody, music. You know, it's all verse. But
and you know, he apparently built a life on that song. You know,
yeah.
I mean, after that he was
yeah.
All he had to do was go to the mailbox.
Exactly. Right. Those royalties never stopped. But so that's but he was basically having a conversation with us with that song, and we all entered into it and could relate to it, right? A lot of stuff he was saying. And
so that's what we want in marriage. We want our spouse to relate to us, and when things break down in communication, you feel more and more distant, and hopefully that doesn't last very long. It happens in every marriage over the dumbest things, or maybe not more serious things, but that can be repaired. But it's how we communicate and how we connect, that relatability to each other. And if that starts to break down, then it's that, you know, remember the beginning. Oh, there's a million good beginnings. Everybody has a beautiful idea when they have their rough, their vision of their song. Oh, what a great, if you're here around Nashville, you know, you say one little phrase and somebody says, oh, that's a song, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll say, oh, I get 10% royalty if you write a song off that idea. You know what I mean? I mean, but they have a rough idea in their head of this concept for a song. But then you got to go and actually write it out. Sometimes they just come out really fast, but other time, most of the time, like life, you know, it takes work. It takes introspection, really deep thinking inside yourself to think, you know, how can I express this to people? How can I express this idea? And that's in marriage, is like a microcosm. It's a little world that you live in where that expression, effective communication and relatability is vital to the life and the happiness in your marriage. So you don't want to be saying, you know, once upon a time when it was like this.
Yes.
Right, Bob?
And Bob Dylan, in fact, speaking of songs from the 40s and 50s, did a bunch of covers from that era. One of them was called Once Upon a Time, and we'd like to play that right now.
Once upon a time, a girl with moonlight in her eyes put her hand in mine and said she loved me so. But that was once upon a time, very long ago. Once upon a hill, we sat beneath the willow tree, counting all the stars and waiting for the dawn. But that was once upon a time. Now the tree is gone. How the breeze ruffled through the hair, how we always laughed as though tomorrow wasn't there. We were young and didn't have a care. Where did it go? Once upon a time, the world was sweeter than we knew. Everything was ours. How happy we were then. But somehow, once upon a time, never comes again.
Back with the music of marriage, and that was a lovely tune written back in the 40s and sung by Bob Dylan. Never thought I'd see the day when he'd sing a crooner song, but he he did a great job, almost countrified it. So anyway, so we are talking about a dialogue versus a conversation in marriage, which...
You mean versus a monologue.
Versus a monologue, exactly. It's often you hear the word, you know, communication, you know, is a big thing in marriage. But communication is, I don't know, when I think of that word, I think of a, it sounds like a business word or something. It kind of leaves me cold. When you talk about a conversation, you know, that's just a little more relatable. And when you talk about a dialogue versus a monologue, that gets into what are your conversations like. And we're not just talking about speaking conversations. We're talking about a lot of things, how you relate to one another, how you live together. Is either a conversation or a monologue. Do you have your own, you know, guys, do you have your own private spheres that you retreat to away from your wife or gals? The same thing. You know, it's, it's okay to have a few, to have some private moments to yourself, you know, for your own little personal reasons. But I think often, when these little spheres become shrines that we worship at, you know, where then it becomes a monologue, and then all of a sudden you've cut your spouse out of your existence for so many periods of time, and it doesn't seem like just because you live together, it seems like that's not a long time compared to how much time you spend living together. But are you really living together? You know, are you just together?
Do you feel fulfilled? I'm not hearing myself, but I'm on, right? Yeah, sure. Anyway, do you feel fulfilled in your marriage connectedness? You know, we're going to talk about that on the next segment. But this whole thing about just talking, a lot of times, life gets in the way, you know, it gets in the way of just being, just talking, just chilling out. And I think it's been a great joy of ours, I guess, in our marriage to just have those times. And we're both kind of artists and dreamer types. We're not businessy minded people. We really don't care for business much. We like, you know, we used to lay in daffodil fields and read poetry and just dream and look at the clouds and the colors of the clouds and like true 70s hippie type people, I guess. But we weren't hippies, though. We just loved nature, and we both grew up near the stores and all, but our parents appreciated living a little on a country road where there was a farm and a beautiful stream, mm-hmm. and it just beckoned you to be with it, you know, and to be together in it. And I think we miss so much of nature and how that can draw you even into love, because the beauty of nature. We sit behind these, what are these things with the apple, with the bite out of it, the thing, computer, the laptop, the phone, and we're staring at this thing. It's like we were born with it in our hand, you know. Instead of being born with a silver spoon in your hand, you're born with the, you know, the i11 in your hand or something.
And that's a good point. How often are we trying to communicate when the other person is trying to text or read a text or search on their phone?
Communicating to other people. So we think we can communicate so many ways because now, used to be, see, we didn't have these things that could talk while we were talking to other people. Mm-hmm. You had a phone on the wall that would ring occasionally, but now, you know, you talk to some people on the phone and they're like, hello, are you there? Are you listening? Oh, you can tell they're texting. They're communicating all right. They're communicating to their hairdresser or their business person, anything but to you. And you're like, your conversation is not, they're not focused on listening to you. Sometimes you talk to a person on the phone even, and they're constantly talking to their kids while you're trying to talk to them, or they're talking to you can just tell you're not getting that focused attention. That shows that I'm interested in you. You matter. And it's my job to make sure you matter. And there are times when you're going to be interrupted and you know, you can't stare at a person always when they're talking at you. But
and your kid sometimes is, you know, immersed in their little game, and while an adult is trying to communicate with them, and they don't even lift up their head to look at you and stop what they're doing if they're so engrossed in it. And that's the type of thing that parents should be careful to monitor, because if that child is grows up thinking that it's okay to ignore the words of another person, especially an adult who's speaking to them, then that's problematic. You know, that will create so many problems in their life going forward.
Yeah. So anyway, just talking to each other, oftentimes too in marriage, you feel like, hey, what happened to all those times when we used to just spend time together and just talk to get to know each other? Because like Bob said, you know, when you want to get to know somebody that you're interested in, you spend all kinds of time. And then the work and the kid, these are important things that happen, and they need to be tended to, and they will take us away from each other. But that's one reason why we would have date nights. We had four kids, but I didn't care if they were 2 weeks old. We had a lot of enthusiastic young couples in our church who didn't have kids yet and thought our kids were so amazing. So I said, oh, you want to come spend a weekend with them? And, oh, that would be so fun. Yeah. And so we'd say, okay, and we'd go away for the weekend and try to make at least one date night. And you can make little times and moments like our thing. It's kind of silly sounding maybe, but we have our meal on we got these really cool wooden trays on Amazon that are great. They stay secure on your lap, and you can put your dinner on there, and we sit there and we eat dinner and turn on an Andy Griffith episode. And they never get old, those things. It's actually the most watched episode on Netflix, I heard. But that's a way that we communicate, because we're like, you know what? We're just eating, we're sharing this, and there's a lot to learn from those shows too, you know. And so it's that times of togetherness, feeling like, hey, we haven't talked for a while. No, I mean like really talked to, not at one another, but
to one another.
There was one Andy Griffith show where Barney's setting up this date for Andy. Oh, man, this girl, everything that Andy liked, she would make it known that what she did like and didn't like. And at one point she said, I hate chit-chat. I love meaningful conversation, but I hate chit-chat. You know, I love the clarinet, but I hate the guitar. And, of course, Andy plays guitar, so he's like, Barney, get her out of here. But she liked meaningful conversation, but the whole time she was telling everybody what she hated and loved, so you better do it her way, I guess.
Her way or highway.
But anyway, talking to each other, learning to talk, not on just your own terms, but talk inclusive of where that person is coming from, and just even letting them talk to you and giving them the time of day. How often do we even pick up a phone to think of somebody who's even beside our spouse? You know, is our spouse kind of lonely for that conversation? Maybe there's other people. Maybe it's a mother. Maybe it's a sick person. Maybe it's a child who's, you know, needs a little extra attention. So talking is...
And, you know, meaningful conversation... Did I interrupt you, or...
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Okay.
Speaking of talking.
Meaningful conversation is best had when you are doing something together that's totally different than a normal routine.
And totally different than the outline that we prepared this morning.
Exactly. If it's going to the farmer's market together, you know, on a Saturday morning and enjoying some hot cider or coffee and, you know, a biscuit or an apple dumpling, you know, and often we found when we took, you know, vacations like down to the beach or something, we would find that often the biggest shifts, the major shifts in our, you know, in our marriage as far as where we want to live, for instance, often came about when our minds were totally free and unencumbered by the daily routine of life. The daily frictions that, unless you get away from, will gradually kind of like, you know, wear your relationship down, you know, like water over a river stone. But, and over time, this is exactly what happens. So the more getaways you can get away with, that would be great. I mean, that's always a plus, and we've always found it to be truly helpful. And certainly, in your own home, you should be able to have meaningful conversation. In fact, every conversation you have should be meaningful, right? Not just if it's a true
conversation. For better or for worse.
If it's a true dialogue,
right,
where you're trying to understand someone, and understanding is truly the key, it's, I would say, one step deeper than listening. Listening is certainly a place to start, because if you're not listening, then what's the point of talking to you? But if you're listening and trying to understand, and understand in such a way, we were taught in by some creative directors in ad agencies that if someone has a problem, to restate the problem in your own words. In other words, a problem having to do with what we're trying to communicate in this particular advertisement series. And if there's a problem with it, you know, to restate the problem rather than just combat the person or knock their idea down. In other words, so that you really understand where they're coming from, why are they putting a black hat on this and not a green hat, you know, or a yellow hat. And it's the same in marriage. That whole thing about understanding. In fact, there's a scripture verse that talks about that too. In Proverbs 17, it says, "A man of knowledge uses words with restraint, and a man of understanding is even-tempered." And the reason is, well, there's a lot of reasons, but using words with restraint really has, I think, more to do with allowing others to speak their mind more. And when you speak, it's not a dominant type of monologue. Unless you're asked to give a lecture or a speech or you know, something like that. But so you kind of restrain your words. But a man of understanding is even tempered. So when you're trying to understand your wife or your husband, not just going beyond listening, and understanding is just another form of listening, but a better form, then the reason you'll be even-tempered is you won't tend to get into arguments. You won't tend to raise your voice because you want to be heard and you're not as interested in what the other person is saying because you don't understand them. So, there's many other applications to that. But husbands are also asked to, or really commanded to, live with their wives in an understanding way and showing honor to the woman as a weaker vessel, since they're heirs with you in the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. That's from 1 Peter 3:7. So actually, God is very intimately connected with whether you're living with your wife, husband, in an understanding way. and looking at her as an heir of grace, not just a pain in the neck or a nag, an heir of grace. So that kind of elevates your wife, you know, quite a bit in your eyes. It should. And but if you're harsh with her, God's not going to hear your prayers. And that's pretty serious stuff. So there's a dynamic here where God is in the center of a Christian marriage, and He's there to help you. He's there to be your friend. He's there to empower you to overcome the evil one who tries to divide both of you. And but he's also God. So you know you don't. You know, trifle with his commands. You say, okay, you're right. I'm on it. And if I'm not, I'm sorry. But time to get back on it.
So talking as Aretha Franklin, there's kind of an unknown, or I don't know if it's unknown, not very well known. It's on a rare and unreleased recording album. She sings a song called Talk to Me. And without talking to each other, what can you learn about each other, right?
Yeah.
How can you, even the Bible says, let the wise hear and increase in learning. And the one who understands obtains guidance. So if you want guidance and direction, if you want your marriage to get energized, to go somewhere, to get back together, you have to start talking. And when you talk, you don't yell. You tell, don't yell. Because as soon as you yell, you know, it's like shouting. People are like in high alert, like, oh, it's like a deer with his tail, white tail, you know, like, oh, what's it? It's too stressful. So when you talk, when you talk, have meaningful conversation, like, well, that girl said, you know, other words, and understand there is meaning to everything that we say. Like, I think we really just, I know for myself, this is for us, just thinking about how we talk, how we sound, and manners, all that goes into it. But the idea of listening with intent, you know, intentionally, and expressing to each other that, you know, we don't want the other person to feel cut off or less than, or to denounce or to trash them, because people speak out of their hearts, and it's important that we each, like it says here, get wisdom and increase in learning so that we can be guided. So anyway.
Yeah, and I like the last part of that verse that where it says, the one who understands obtains guidance, and it's another way God gets involved in your life. In a real dynamic way, because if you're trying to understand, well, if you're trying to understand God and His Word, He'll guide you further. If you're trying to understand your wife, He'll also guide you in how to better relate to her and deal with what you understand about her. You know, whether it's her faults or her, you know, glories, her beauty. But so anyway, we got this song from Aretha called, what's it called, Evelyn?
It's pretty basic. Talk to Me.
Yeah, there you go.
Listen, baby, there's something I want you to do now. Talk to me, darling. I love the things you say. Oh, talk to me, talk to me in your own sweet gentle way. Let me hear. Tell me, tell me, tell me. see. I want you to tell me all of those things I need to know.
Welcome back to The Music of Marriage with Bob and Evie. Again, our website is themusicofmarriage.com. We have a book, How to Make Your Marriage Sing, and our weekly shows try to help us to keep the music playing. So in the few minutes that we have left, we're talking about communication in marriage as, you know, monologue, dialogue, how it should be. But the goal of it is to stay connected through our conversation and communication. And there will be arguments that, you know, this is the life we have. We're not perfect people. So the thing is to make all those dynamics work, just like in music, all the dynamics work. The highs, the lows, the slows, the fasts, the discordant notes, it all ends up making a beautiful song if you stay with it, like any artwork, and see it through. So we wanted to mention that if you're committed, you want to get inside the mind of your spouse, like Dylan said about Sinatra. He got inside your mind. He sang in a way you could totally relate to.
He got inside the song itself, because he sang in a way where he understood the meaning of the song and what it was trying to communicate. And he communicated, so he sang it effortlessly.
And so in the same way, if you're relating music to marriage and communication, you know, that's our goal. And that is always how it starts out. Usually people don't get married if they don't want to continue that communication relationship. That's why they get married. And often it's not ourselves inherently that's the problem. It's just the way we've allowed life to encroach on it, and we've, without even realizing it, all of a sudden the kids are more important than me, the job's more important than me, your hobby's more important than me. And so that's important what Aretha just sang about talk to me. And so getting inside each other's minds in that way. But ultimately we have to get inside the mind of God, and imagine how he imagined marriage and relationships to be, how it will be eternally when we're perfect and we don't have all these issues. It'll be very freeing, and we are very freed immediately when our spouse starts listening to us, when they stop talking at us and they say, you know what, I want to hear you. I want to hear your heart in this. And so Bob's going to share something from our book about that concept.
Yeah, so if the love of your life shares a thought or desire, it should never be taken as insignificant, because behind it all is a heart where that thought or desire lives. And don't take it lightly. When you actually take that perspective, it means a whole lot to your wife, husbands, when she knows that you get where her heart is at the moment, and what desires and thoughts come from her heart. You're understanding her heart. You're not just understanding her words. And that's where listening at a deeper level goes all the way down to the heart.
And that's why those songs of Sinatra, that's why the songs are so popular. Like, Daryl, you were talking about Gentle on My Mind. You know, people can totally relate to, you know, when people can relate and they feel like they're being understood, or they, like, oh, that song, it speaks what I feel and what I think, right? And that's what mm-hmm. makes the best songs. I think you were mentioning one by the Beatles, too, that was it yesterday or one of those that has that effect.
Yeah. Yeah, very relatable songs.
Because no matter what we do, we're relating to human beings, for mm-hmm. for better or for worse, right? So it's only going to help us all if we learn to talk to each other with the goal of having a person feel valued, really, ultimately.
Yeah, and, you know, but if what is meaningful gets shrugged off, you know, your husband or wife won't think you care about them, obviously, anytime you shut someone down. And so if you lost that two-way loving conversation, how do you get it back, right?
Well, often you can get it back just by telling them that you do care about what their thoughts are. And all of a sudden, even if they might even decide now they agree with you just because you gave them permission to finish their sentence, you know.
Or that you've acknowledged where you went wrong there.
Right.
You know, and the more you do that, the more open and receptive, you know, your wife or your husband's going to be to your own ideas and desires.
So we don't want to lose what we start out with. And another Bob Dylan song, Once Upon a Time, kind of reflects on how, well, it used to be like this. But we can resurrect that and keep that going. That's what hopefully we'll all be inspired to do.
Well, the Once Upon a Time was the first song we played.
I'm sorry.
And that's, I did want to say something about that, though. And, you know, at the end of that song, I mean, Bob is basically saying that all these beautiful memories were once upon a time, but they're not anymore. And you want to keep those beautiful memories for all time, time and eternity. So, and the way to do that is listen to what Bob has to say now. He didn't write this song. It's a cover tune from the 50s, I believe, called My One and Only Love.
The very thought of you makes my heart sing like an April breeze on the wings of spring. And you appear in all your splendor, my one and only love. The shadows fall and spread their mystic charms in the hush of night while you're in my arms.
I feel your lips so warm and tender. My what an old love. The touch of your hand is like heaven. A heaven that I've never known. And the blush of your cheek whenever I speak tells me that you are my own. You fill my eager heart with such desire. Every kiss you give sets my soul on fire. I give myself in sweet surrender. My what an only love. The touch of your hand is like heaven. A heaven that I've never known. And the blush of your cheek whenever I speak tells me that you are my own. You fill my eager heart with such desire. Every kiss you give sets my soul on fire. I give myself in sweet surrender. My one.